Barbaraki. Shivati vai Barbaraki. Prantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai Giriraj Maharaj ki. Jai Nitai Gopurna. Okay, so last night we said that we had the closed book exam at the end of the 24th chapter, but we'll have it at the end of the 23rd chapter. So tonight we're going to finish chapter 22, so that means chapter 23 will be finished next week and the week after next. So it means I haven't set the exam date yet, but the exam will be probably in about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. Okay. So it'll be at the end of chapter 23, so just everyone get ready for that. That's the exam date, just so you know. Okay, any points from last night?
We discussed the difference between a Grahamedi and a Grahata. Like Grahamedi maybe means center, so there the house becomes the center and then it keeps extending, like, you know, wives, children, assets like cars, you know, people just keep on gathering assets and keeping the house as the center.
Mm.
That is a Grahamedi thing, and Grahata means, Asta means shelter, so the Grahata ashram means Krishna is the center of the house and the husband and wife both work together to satisfy the desires of Krishna.
Yeah. Husband and wife will work together peacefully or unpeacefully to satisfy the desires of Krishna. Depending on the week and the day. Okay. Okay. Any other questions?
Married life simply means your home has to become a temple.
Why is that important?
This was in the first level. But once you become, once you get married, you have to make sure your house has to become temple where you can chant peacefully and do your devotion.
Mm.
And that has to be husband for the
children. Good point. Any other points?
Grihastha, Grihastha Dharma is only to, Dharma is, Grihastha Dham Dharma is only Dhan, charity.
Main
charity is the main thing for
Krishna. Yeah. Not give charity to become
purified. Swami says that the Brahmana protects the Kshatriya, and Kshatriya protects the Brahmana, and both protect each other. And Almighty Lord protects both of them. Fourth verse.
Good point. Any other points?
But the parents will say that this the child they have got is not born again.
Mm. That is the primary responsibility of the parents.
Mm.
Make sure that the child does not enter into another womb.
Yes.
Good point.
If one should not become a husband or a teacher, if you can't take one parent, the parents.
Yeah, generally that is the case, that the man needs to feel that he is in control. It is not always like that. Sometimes we see the wife is more in control. Definitely within their relationship, they share the control in different areas of their life. But generally, not always, but generally, the men feel that they need to have the ultimate control. And in order for the relationship to work successfully, they both have to abide and peacefully work like that. And if you missed last night's class, you can listen to it if you need to, if you want to understand more about that, because we went into it in great detail. Not sure if you went there last night. No, no, no. If you want, you can listen to a lot of stuff. We went into great detail about Grihastha relationships. It's interesting, so give you a chance. Okay. Any other points?
There are different types of marriage. The most first class marriage is when the father of the girl propose, give the daughter in charity to the boy, then that then accept my daughter as a wife. This is most like the first class in terms of starting a good relation. We talk about like a fourth or fifth in which the positive turn by the man who proposes to a girl. So that's sort of a
Yeah, so the best, there's eight types of marriage mentioned in the Manu Samhita. The best is considered when the father offers the daughter in charity to the bride's family, to the groom's family, to the boy. Like that. So that is considered the best type of marriage. But which marriage is the most fun? Which one is the most enjoyable?
Vedic.
Out of the eight, which one is the most fun?
When the father gives the daughter to the bridegroom.
Yeah, that's the best one, but I'm saying which is the most fun?
Rakshasa.
Yeah, Rakshasa is this. Like that. You see what Krishna did with Rukmini? Right? He just drove up on the chariot, just put her on the chariot and just drove off. That's the best. Right? You just steal the girl, steal the princess. Right? And then only the Kshatriyas can do that. Right? The others cannot do it. The Brahmanas cannot do it. The Vaishyas cannot do it. The Shudras cannot do it. But the Kshatriyas are allowed to do it like that. But then they'll be challenged. If they do that, they will be challenged. And then they have to fight to prove that they are the most qualified person for the princess. Like that. That's definitely the most fun.
Also, even so, when it comes to Bhishma, make sure that the girl has not given already word to anybody else. So the girl's consent still there. Also, one more point you have mentioned before. Because the modern society is that you first love and then marry. But the Vedic society is not in them.
Yeah, you can see in the Vedic culture everything is superior, right? All facets of the culture are superior. And tonight we'll see, last night we saw the relationship between Devahuti and Kardama, and tonight we'll see the superiority of the Vedic culture, how it is a far superior culture in every aspect. Every part of their life is better, and it will be described why that is so. What it is based upon, what makes it superior, and how to satisfy one's material desires and make spiritual progress simultaneously. These things will be discussed. So we'll go through this, the remainder of the chapter, verses 21 to 39. Any other points? Do you want to come in, Tanya? Okay. You can sit.
I'm okay here.
You want to sit near the door? Okay. Is there any more chairs? Yeah, Richie. Everyone's okay. Otherwise, you can move more this way also if you want. Just as long as everyone's comfortable. Before there was more men than Mataji, so now it's about equal. So. Now it's about equal, so there's six tables, so the men can have three tables and the mothers can have three tables, because now there's the same amount of mothers there are men. So when you come in, just make sure you leave enough room for the mothers to be comfortable. Okay. So verse 21. Shri Maitreya said, O great warrior, Yajura, the sage Kardama said this much only, and then became silent, thinking of his worshipable Lord Vishnu, who is a lotus on his navel. As he silently smiled, his face captured the mind of Devahuti, who began to meditate upon the great sage. So why was Kardama Muni smiling?
Because he was meditating on Vishnu.
Because he's meditating on?
Lord Vishnu.
Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Yeah. So she was attracted to him, but as Jiva Goswami has pointed out previously, we should not think that the attraction between Kardama Muni and Devahuti is material or mundane. It is spiritual. No? They are both highly elevated personalities, and they're both, in their hearts, they're dedicated to the Lord. So therefore, she's attracted to him, because he's an attractive personality, and she's an attractive personality. But he is smiling because he is meditating on Krishna within his heart. And therefore, she's attracted, ultimately, to his devotion or his bhakti. And this is the primary quality that we look at when we choose a husband or wife. When it's time to get married, the next point comes in our life, the main qualification we look for is the person a good devotee? Right? Are they Krishna conscious? That is the main qualification. Okay. They must be attached to Krishna, dedicated to Krishna. So that is the main qualification. Not that when it's time to get married, not that we just simply choose the husband and wife on our own accord. Vedic culture and Krishna consciousness is based on dependence upon one's authority. If you want to get married, then you approach your authority and you express the desire to your authority, to your guru. And your guru may place you in the hands of other senior Vaishnavas, or he may deal with it himself. That's his choice. So he may say, you can please marry this particular person, or he may give it the responsibility to someone else to decide for you. But the point is that if you approach your authority to choose your partner, to choose your husband or wife, then your authority will make the choice for you based on Krishna consciousness. Whereas if it's left to ourselves, because we are conditioned, we have material attachment, the decision may be based upon our material desires. I want to marry this person because this person is attractive, or this person leads nice kirtan, or this person dances nicely, or I like the way they cook. It is not the primary consideration. The primary consideration is, are they a good devotee? So in all of the major decisions we make in our life, it is based upon approaching our authority, and our authority will make the best decision for us, because they will always guide us according to what is best for our Krishna consciousness. So that is the principle in Vedic culture. Prabhupada says, the smile of such a Krishna conscious person is so attractive that simply by smiling he wins so many admirers, disciples and followers. So Prabhupada is explaining that when a pure devotee smiles, just by the smile, everyone becomes attracted. Like that. And we saw the best example of that was Srila Prabhupada himself. Srila Prabhupada would simply smile. Prabhupada came to the Western countries with nothing material, and he never offered material facilities to his followers. In fact, it was quite the opposite. Quite often, his followers had to perform great austerities, live a very simple life. They have to practice renunciation. So Prabhupada would not give material facility, yet people were more devoted to Prabhupada than to anyone else, practically. They were completely sold out in their hearts to Prabhupada. And why was that? Simply because when he smiled, then everything was perfect. That is perfection. You get the smile, or you get the glance of the guru, of the senior Vaishnava. When the guru smiles at you, then everything is complete. Your life is successful. When the senior devotees are happy with you, when devotees are happy with you, they smile at you, everything is peaceful. Everything is perfect. But if you do not get that, then... So, this is the situation. She sees Kalam, and when he smiles, she feels, yes, this is the person I want to marry. I've made the right decision in that respect. Any points? Okay. After having unmistakably known the decision of the queen, as well as that of Devahuti, the emperor most gladly gave his daughter to the sage, whose host of virtues was equaled by hers. Empress Shatarupa lovingly gave most valuable presents suitable for the occasion, such as jewelry, clothes, and household articles, in dowry to the bride and the bridegroom. The Prabhupada says within the purport that dowries are
legal.
He says that, but what does he say in the purport?
Authorized.
Authorized, yes, they're authorized. They are?
Voluntary.
Is anyone read English?
Compulsory.
Ah, oh, very good.
Can you say bona fide?
What's that?
Bona fide.
If you can find that word there, that's very good. But we're looking for the word the Prabhupada wrote. Prabhupada said? No, he said compulsory. It is compulsory. That when you marry, this is the Vedic system, that when the daughter was married, then the parents of the daughter, they had to provide a dowry for the daughter and her new husband. In other words, they were materially looked after as soon as they were married. And you see that in many of the traditional cultures, it is like that. In the Amish, it is still like that. In many, even in the Mormons, it is very much like that, even to this day, to a great extent. When they get married, then everything is given to them. You know, totally everything is looked after. That is actually the system. And this is why Vedic culture is superior to any other culture. And that's why in this section of the Bhagavad Gita we're reading, there's many Vedic cultural points. And we need to understand these points and try to apply these points as much as possible. Because there is no culture. Culture means the way that a society should live, its values, its lifestyle and so forth. So there is no culture superior to the Vedic culture. Because it is the most satisfying culture and it gives everyone the most material security and satisfaction so that they can practice their Krishna culture. So in the Vedic culture, when you got married, everything was automatically there. I remember when I got married, Veda Priya and I got married, then our parents were quite generous. They gave us, you know, quite an amount of money to set ourselves up and so it wasn't like we didn't have anything. But it wasn't like they just gave us everything like that. But in the Vedic culture, it is like that. You just, everything is given like that. So that means you don't have to spend, you know, like if you look at people these days, they get married and then you have to spend 20, 30 years working hard to get everything you want. You waste so much time, right? Whereas in the Vedic culture, it is so perfect. At the time you're married, everything is there. So then you don't have to work hard materially. You can focus on your spiritual life. All you have to do is maintain yourself. You know, you don't have to work hard to get so many material assets and, you know, and attain property and material facility. Everything is already there. So therefore, Prabhupada says that the dowry is compulsory. It should be there. And that's the ideal that we should try to come to. Of course, it's much more difficult now because the price of living is inflated to an artificial level. Just like, you know, this house next door to us, like right here, we just there, a few feet away, there's a house there. How much is that house worth?
More than a million.
1.3 million. Huh? Why is it worth 1.3 million? Who says it's worth 1.3 million? What was it made of? Bricks. You know, how much is a brick cost? Why is that 1.3 million?
Location.
Yeah, location. Or it's just artificial inflation. Right? It wasn't like that in Vedic times. In Vedic times, like 5,000 years ago, you know, you didn't go around India. You know, someone said, oh, you know, you can't live there unless you pay this much money. Like that, if you want to live somewhere, just build a house. I mean, maybe you have to get permission from the king, but basically that's the system. Not that there's this artificial standard of living and they've got everyone artificially working so hard to try to, you know, with something in their mind, try to attain something in their mind which is worth 1.3 million. In Vedic times, it is much more simple than that. Right? If you want a house, build the house. What's the problem? The parents will give you all the facility to build the house. Everything's already done. Now concentrate on Krishna. Just work as much as you need to maintain the family, and then concentrate on Krishna. Now people, you know, the guy who owns that house is probably working so hard, he's too tired to even come to Bhakti Baba. Yeah, quite often I go over there and knock on the door and just say, come over. Mm-hmm. You know, I even say, you know, just open the window and you can listen. But you don't have to leave your house. But the guy's so tired because he has to work to pay off that house, he can't even come. Right? So it's an artificial society. So Vedic culture is superior because it allows people, every part of the culture allows people to remember Krishna, to aid them to remember Krishna. That's the point. And we'll see that in this system. First chapter.
The system of Vedic in the old time, which is like 2-3 years back, people were poor. Many of the girls, they used to kill the girls because of the system. So how do we conserve that? Because those who are poor cannot afford to live that way.
Yeah, but people are not poor in the Vedic times. Everyone had what they needed. Everyone had what they needed. What happened in the Vedic times is when Yudhishthira performed the yajna. The yajna, all the utensils in the yajna were made of solid gold. Solid gold. And when the yajna was finished, because they would not use it a second time, they threw it all out. They just threw it in a pile. And the sudras were allowed to come and take it all and use it in their house. Just as their paraphernalia. And everything that Draupadi wore and Yudhishthira wore, all their clothes, the royal clothes, when they got a little hole in it or something, they didn't wear it again. They were just given to the sudras. So the sudras were wearing the king's clothes, his used clothes like that. So everything was supplied for them. So obviously they didn't have the wealth that everyone else had, but still, you know, they could at least give something when their daughter got married and so forth. At least they were looked after. You know, they would build them a simple house or something and give them simple accommodation. They didn't have great opulence, but still they had enough. Is that? No. Yogi, you have
a... Oh, no, I was just trying to make a comment when you were talking about the inflation. About this 30 years ago, this place would not have been worth more than 200,000. People didn't want to live in this area. Actually, so you're quite right in saying what you're saying, because they bought Little Park, Elk Park, or something like St. Kilda 20 years ago.
Yeah, when we brought the temple in 1975, we brought this temple. I think we brought, from memory, I think we brought this temple for $185,000, from memory. It might have been a little bit more. And from memory, the house on that side, the first one on that side, George's house, we could have brought that for $30,000. Now that's probably worth 1.something million. Okay. Who says it's worth that much? Why is it even worth $30,000? Why can't this be worth 10,000 or something, isn't it? Well, who says? Okay. So everything's artificial. Material? Yes,
yeah. Prabhupada, what are your comments on or about parents working hard now to try and provide whatever facilities for children so that in future they can focus on developing their Krishna consciousness?
That's the duty of the parent. But the problem is society has made it so difficult that you have to work really, really hard for a long, long time to do what, you know, could be done within this, you know, it's just as a natural part of life in the Vedic times.
Because I've heard comments where some say, you don't have to work hard, you don't have to provide, you came with nothing, so they will manage themselves too.
I think that if you're a parent, you have the responsibility to look for the security of your children. That's natural and that's Vedic. The problem is not in doing that, the problem is the way society is now, it puts so much pressure on everyone. That to do that, I mean, it's very difficult. Even my parents, was much easier for them than what it is for this generation. Yeah, because things didn't cost as much back then. You could own a house much quicker and so forth. These days, you know, practically, you have to work hard for years. And so stress is just going up and up and up and up. And up and up. Just like I went, we were driving down to the farm, I think it was on Wednesday or some day last week, and we stopped in the petrol station. I went to the toilet. And then, you know, in the toilets, they have like the ads on the wall, right? And, you know, normally they have, I don't know, I haven't been in the toilet for a long time, but, you know, I thought, you know, they have like Coke or IBM or whatever they advertise, right? The ads were all about depression. I thought, my God, you know, this is how, what colour you're going to be becoming like. You know, you just go to the toilet and they've got things, are you depressed? If you are depressed, ring this number. It's okay to be depressed. don't feel bad about it, just ring this number. I don't understand. This is a sign of how much stress people must be under. But they're just driving down to Geelong to go home. You know, and there's so much, that's like the main thing that people are conscious of these days. It's a sign that obviously they're pushing people way too hard. So that's my comment. My comment is not wrong like that, but it's very difficult. Jagannath, any
questions? Just a quick little check-up. There was one why girls are killed today. I think the dowry is there, but it is there in the wrong sense. The main purpose of dowry, if I understood today, is basically so that the bridegroom and the bride may not work hard and they can start a Krishna consciousness. But today, the objects which are demanded out of dowry have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Like they demand a motorbike, a car, or a flat in some area. And then still the husband wants to work also on the dowry. And therefore, in that context today, dowry is actually become evil. Because the motives are evil. That's what my realization. But this paragraph gives a lot of clarity to it. At least I didn't know it until today.
And interesting, Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj makes this point that when the girl gets married, as is mentioned here, she is provided with as much gold as possible when she's given in her dowry. When she's given to the boy, she must be wearing as much gold as possible. And you'll see in this case, because it is Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, then obviously Devahuti is covered in gold. But Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj makes the point, the gold belongs to the girl. It doesn't belong to the boy. Right? It belongs to the girl. Why does it belong to the girl? Because if anything ever happens to him, if he dies untimely, which would not normally happen, but if he ever died untimely, her parents are securing her future. Then she has security. Because all that gold, right, can be used for looking after her and her children. Like that. If anything ever happens. Okay, so that's the point. That's why the dowry was given. It's actually security. That's the Vedic culture. Everything should be taken care of. You know, these days you get married and, you know, in a lot of cases you may not get so much. You know, and then you're in so much anxiety and then I have to work so hard for so many years. That all these things should be provided. You can be peaceful and then you can practice Krishna consciousness. That's the point.
So this is an indication of a father's affection for daughters. Affection for daughters. He may even borrow for a loan and then still give to God. If he's still his own affection, it's not really centered to God's good.
It should be done.
Now, Prabhupada mentioned that the dowry given to her is taken, not to the boy.
No, it's given to both of them. But specifically, Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj points out about the jewels, because she comes with gold and jewels, mongols, which all these things. This she always keeps. The point he makes is it should never be sold during her life. Even if the husband is poor and even if they're in financial difficulty, they should not sell that gold. Because that gold is meant to protect her just in case. It's her father protecting her. Just in case anything ever happens. It's her father's guarantee that she'll always be safe. That's the Vedic culture.
Isn't that
a
system in Western culture as well?
Yeah, when I got married, it's still traditional that the bride's family is supposed to pay for most of the wedding and so forth. It's still seen like that. It's probably becoming less prevalent now in our generation. But if you go one generation back, our parents, my parents, it was still seen like that. So when we got married, my wife's family, they still provided, they paid for the wedding and they gave a certain amount of money and so forth like that. Any other points?
I like nowadays you see like dowry system has become so vicious in India, and like nowadays the girls, some parents are not very well off. Like in Kali Yuga we see many parents are struggling and all, and if they have 2-3 daughters and all, then it becomes very difficult. And like Mohan Bhagavan Prabhu was saying that, then, you know, because of affection they may borrow and all, but the girl may not want that to happen. Like for example, I wouldn't want my parents to borrow money for my dowry and then suffer the rest of their life. So what is the role of the husband providing security? Like the father is giving the jewellery and all for the daughter's future, but What is the role of the husband in providing security?
Well, he has to maintain the family. He still has to work. If he's a brahmana, then he has to teach and do his brahminical activities. And they live off charity, but they live very simply. The kshatriyas are very opulent. The kshatriyas are meant to be wealthy. Right? They live in big palaces, they have jewels all over their bodies like that, the men and the women like that. But they never think it's theirs. Kshatriyas never think it all belongs to us. They think that we're Krishna's representatives and we're doing this service for Krishna. Like that. But they never think it actually belongs to them. Like that. But they have to be very wealthy. Because the citizens have to have confidence in them. So they have to wear crowns, and they have to carry jewels, and wear gold, and all these things. That's their system. So, but then the kshatriya's duty is that he governs like that. So then he takes taxes as part of that, so they're very wealthy. Taxes are distributed, but a certain amount is kept for their own wealth like that. And the Vaishyas should be wealthy, because they own a lot of cows, they do trade, they have grain, so they should be wealthy. So then, he provides for the family that way. And the Sudras are looked after by the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas, as we said previously, because they work for them. Right? They serve the Kshatriyas, they serve the Brahmanas, they serve the Vaishyas. So then they're always maintained, they're always provided with material facility. But the Sudras are not allowed to own, Gopi Prabhu was explaining this point to us, and I've mentioned it before. The Sudras were not allowed to ride in conveyances, chariots. Right? A Sudra could never go in a chariot and ride around because he could never have this perception that he was like a superior entity. They had to understand their position. Only the Kshatriyas, maybe some of the rich Vaishyas, would move around in chariots and so forth. So the Vaishyas, the Sudras were kept in like a dependent position. Because you see these days, every Sudra, right, because they're all Sudras, they're not even Sudras, right, but all these Sudras, everyone has a car. And what do? Right, no one does anything good. Right, what do they use the cars for? And Prabhupada explains this, it's all artificial standards of living. They're just a bunch of Sudras. What is their life based on? Sense gratification. You give them cars, what do? They go to the hotel, they go to the casino, they go to the, like that, that's what they do. So therefore they should not be given that facility. They should just stay, if you don't have a chariot, you can't go very far. You just stay there, you serve your master. Sudra serves the master. The Vaishya, the Kshatriya, the Sudra, that's their position. And they're provided for very nicely. They get very good food. Like if you live in Yudhisthira's palace, you eat like Yudhisthira is. It's not that you get, you know, he gets like ghee and you don't. You get all that they eat. Just like we live here in the temple, right? Radha Balabha gets some pretty far out, you know, things to eat. So what do we get? Pretty far out things to eat, you know. But that's because we're living with the king. So the Sudras, they're looked after very nicely, but they don't own anything. They just live on what they're given as their position. Mm. So then when they get married, then they can give a dowry based on what they've accumulated and so forth like that. But they're meant to live simply. They're not meant to have wealth. So. Does that answer what you...
And I was having one more question. From here we are understanding that the purpose of dowry is so that the husband and wife can spend more time in Krishna consciousness. But then if you also have a daughter, then you have to earn dowry for that daughter so that she and her husband, so then you will be earning money, no? So that you can provide for dowry for that daughter.
Yeah, but that's what happens in life. Like you work, so obviously you're going to accumulate. You know, your kids are growing up for 20 years or 16 years or whatever, then you've got time to accumulate a certain amount. And you were given by your parents, so you have already, and then you accumulate more. And plus in Vedic times, all the families live together. So when it's time for someone to get married, everyone would say, you know, give that, give that, give that, accumulate a family dowry, and then give. That was the nice thing about the culture. Just like if you live close to the family, even in India, if you live close to the family, it's so nice. You know, you can just, like in India even now, my family still live in the same streets and everything. So, you know, you cook a chutney and then you just walk next door and say, try this chutney, and everyone's always going across the road and giving like that. And all the kids are all going, you know, over to each other's houses. And, you know, we know families in India who, you know, they just buy one piece of land, big, like 1 acre, And you know, the uncle lives on that side, and the brother lives on that side, and the father lives on that side, and everyone's still living in, and all the kids are playing with each other, grow up with their cousins. Very nice way to live. That's how it was. Like that. But in Kali Yuga, everything's wrecked. Especially in the Western countries. Western countries is all very... So that's... Rusty, you had something?
Yeah,
I was again for the recovery of the children for the doctor from Egypt, they will provide them. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we'll learn about some more Vedic cultural points. That was an interesting one. Thus relieved of his responsibility by handing over his daughter to a suitable man, Swayambhuva Manu, his mind agitated by feelings of separation, embraced his affectionate daughter with both his arms. So Prabhupada says that within the purport that the parent's responsibility is until the child is married. That is the responsibility. Until your child is married, then you must take care of that child. Actually, it doesn't finish. It's not that, you know, okay, now the child's married, okay, at last. But at least when they're married, then the main responsibility goes to the husband. Like that. So the daughter, when the father gives the daughter away, then really the responsibility goes to the husband. It's not that they don't have anything to do with each other anymore, but it's not that he is the main provider anymore. But up until the point of marriage, then you must look after the child. If you have a girl, if you have a daughter, then you have to make sure she is married to a proper person who will look after her. That is your responsibility. The emperor was unable to bear the separation of his daughter. Therefore, tears poured from his eyes again and again, drenching his daughter's head as he cried, "My dear mother, my dear daughter." So we made that point last night also. Prabhupada says that in the purport that a girl is never
left alone.
Never left alone? Yeah. Or never. Always protected, yeah. A girl is never independent. A girl is always to be under the protection of her father. Right, or her husband, or her son. Right, and in a modern context, it means that when you become a devotee, it means you're under the protection of your spiritual master. Right, it is his responsibility to look after you, in the sense that he is your spiritual guide. But you cannot expect that he necessarily will take care of all of your material situation. But he will give you guidance on how your material situation will be looked after. It's not that your guru will necessarily provide for you materially, but he will make sure that he puts you in a situation where you will be looked after. Like that. So it means that the Matajis must always be protected by the men. And within ISKCON, it is the duty of the male members of ISKCON to make sure that the Matajis are always looked after and always protected. If we ever see a woman is struggling or is unprotected, then we must immediately make arrangements that she is protected. That is our culture. In the absence of a proper father or a proper husband. Okay. After asking and obtaining the great sage's permission to leave, the monarch mounted his chariot with his wife and started for his capital, followed by his retinue. Along the way he saw the prosperity of the tranquil seers, beautiful hermitages, on both the banks, charming banks of the Saraswati, the river so agreeable to saintly persons. So Prabhupada points out that previously there were many magnificent places for spiritual understanding. That's what the world was like in the Vedic times. That if you wanted to become spiritually enlightened, you could find many places. Prabhupada says in the purport, so in the days gone by, there were many neighborhoods called Rishikulas, where great saintly persons resided. So if you desire to become spiritually enlightened, you could go to a place where all the sages were assembled and you could live with them. Right? And in that sacred place, then you could build a little cottage along with the other sages, and all of you could perform spiritual life together in order to perfect your consciousness. And these places, as we read in the previous chapter, were very beautiful. Bindu Sarovara, many very beautiful birds, very beautiful trees, clear water, everything was very peaceful. And you were very satisfied, and you could be in that place and you could become spiritually enlightened. So, once again, the world is not so perfect now. We got, somehow we took birth in the age of Kali. Somehow we didn't perfect ourselves previously, although we may have had the opportunity in previous yugas, but we did not take advantage. So now, we're in Kali Yuga. So we have to make some peaceful arrangement for ourselves to make spiritual advancement. So what did Srila Prabhupada do? Out of his mercy, then in this city, and many of you, many of the people from India, they come all the way to Australia, to the Western world, to escape Vedic culture. But Prabhupada got here before you, right? And he established a magnificent spiritual place. So the first time you walk in here, you think, what is this beautiful place? First time I ever walked in here, 1989, I walked in the front gate and I walked in and I thought, I don't want to ever leave this place. What is this place? Such a beautiful spiritual place. Powerful spiritual atmosphere where you can make spiritual advancement. Where you can gather with other sages and you can perfect your life and become Krishna conscious. That is the potency of that. So we have to, Prabhupada has already done it, but we have to create more of these spiritual places. We can even make our home like that and then invite people to our home. And people, when they come to our home, they think, this is such a nice atmosphere. I want my home to also be like this. Or we bring them to the temple and they think, it's such a nice atmosphere. I also want to be like this. So we have to create these places all around the world, even in Kali Yuga, even though it's difficult, so that people can take shelter and they can also make spiritual advancement. And then we should also make plans to sometimes go to Mayapur and to Puri and Vrindavan, because those places are very potent and very beautiful. Very beautiful places. Has anyone ever been to Madhuram Dweep in Navadweep in Mayapur? You've been there? Did you go up the river and then land?
Yes.
You remember? You remember the big tree? You've been to that place where the big tree is on the bank of the river? Anyone else been there? Madhuram Dweep? He may have taken you there. What happened is that the where the Bhagirathi or the Ganges flows, then shooting off that is the Jamuna, what we call the Jamuna. And then if you go down there, then you go down and then the boat lands, and that place is not different to Ayodhya. But now what's happened the last few years is that the river's become a little dry and you can't always take the boat up. So you may not have gone there on foot. But I remember a few years ago, I think it was 2005, we went there, I took some devotees, I took Glenn and Theo and I think Liam came and Vedapriya and a few other devotees, and we went there. And this place is like going back to another, you understand what is being spoken about in the Bhagavatam. It's the most beautiful place you can imagine. And you go up this very beautiful river and everything's very lush and green, and as it is in Mayapur. And finally you get to this place and the boat stops. And then there's this huge tree, like an old tree, and not a banyan tree, some other type of tree. And it must be hundreds of years old, this tree. And you just can imagine what it was like back then. So peaceful. And there's nothing around. There's no buildings or anything. The whole place is so peaceful. And you get there and you think, why would I ever want to leave this place? Let me just sit down on the bank of this place and just perfect my spiritual life with other sages. So, sometimes we should go to Mayapur and Vrindavan and Puri. And we should visit, and there are many wonderful places even now in the Holy Dham where we can spend some time and we can meditate and perform devotional service and perfect our Krishna consciousness. Just like the last 2 years, I went to the Japa retreat in Varshana with Burujan Prabhu and Sachinandan Swami. Does anyone know where Varshana is? Or what that place is? Radharani?
Home.
Home. Where her parents live. What are her parents' names? Yeah. Mother Kirtida and Vrishabhanu Maharaj. So if you go there into this day, Vashana is very beautiful. There's a beautiful palace on top of the hill. And Srimati Radharani, she eternally lives at this place with her parents. So we did a japa retreat for maybe 5 days. And we all sat there on the side of the hill and we just chanted japa 64 rounds a day, just taking darshan of Radharani's palace on the hill. And this is like going into another world. It is going into another world. So sometimes we have to go to these places and just settle down and just absorb ourselves with spiritual activity. That's why at the farm we try to organise retreats with Burujambhavu and so forth, so that we can just go to a place, assemble with some sages, right, and then absorb ourselves in spiritual life. That's what this temple is for. Where are we up to?
28.
Overjoyed to know of his arrival, his subjects came forth from... Can we read the one before that? After asking the ten great sages permission to leave. Do we read that? Did I read that?
No.
So I say
tranquility of beautiful.
Oh, you're right. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Overjoyed to know of his arrival, his subjects came forth from Brahmavata to greet their returning lord with songs, prayers and musical instruments. So when the king comes back from a tour, it is the custom of the citizen to come and greet him. That is spontaneous, just like when our guru comes, we all come and greet them. Or when Prabhupada used to come to the airport, then everyone used to go and greet Prabhupada at the airport. Those were good days in ISKCON. The 70s, have you ever seen the videos in the 70s? Right, Prabhupada is there. Right, and there's 50 mad Hare Krishnas doing this like the most intense kirtan you've ever seen in the middle of an airport. Right, sometimes the camera goes around the airport and looks at all the people, and all the people are just like of that. And there's this 50 mad Hare Krishnas in the middle of the airport waiting for Prabhupada. And there was one time Prabhupada was on the other side of the did you ever do that? Gokularani Maharaj?
Right.
Did you ever go to the airport when Prabhupada?
Mm-hmm.
Whereabouts?
London.
In London? Was it like that? All the devotees were there?
Oh, yeah.
And there's one where Prabhupada was on the other side of the barrier, and the barrier is about 6 foot tall, and then Prabhupada just put his japa bead up, his hand up like that, he was chanting japa, he just put his hand up like that, and the devotees saw his hand, the devotees went wild. Right? And then Prabhupada finally came out. Right, and then Prabhupada was walking through the airport and everyone was just following Prabhupada. So this is the system, is when the guru comes, like that, we go to greet the guru. Right? These days we're going to go to the airport, 50 of us, and have a kirtan. They used to back then. But the point is that we should go and greet the great personality. So when Swayambhu Manu would come, when the king would come, everyone would go and greet him. Like that, in anticipation, because he was their guru. Like that. These days, the political leaders don't get the same kind of reception generally. Just like when George Bush, is he still the president?
Yeah.
Still? They haven't done the election yet? Are they going to do the election?
November.
November is it? My God. America really get carried away, don't they? In Australia we have an election last for 6 weeks. That's seriously, we have an election 6 weeks. America, this thing has been going on for 2 years.
Yeah,
it's still haven't had the election. I thought they had the election. Not that. So it's still going. But when he won the first time, when he first became the president, normally what happens is they drive the president from the I think it's that big, does anyone know what it's called? It's like a big
Capitol
Hill to the White House. There's something out in front of the White House, like a big thing. I don't know what it's called. There's like a monument. So the tradition is they drive the president from there to the White House, the first time he entered the White House. And when Bush went there for the first time, when he first won, normally there's some system or something happens like that. I can't remember exactly what happened, but apparently they had to stop the whole parade because there were so many people throwing eggs and tomatoes. They had to stop it, and he had to drive them around the back or something like that. So it's very different to what we have in the Bhagavatam. Oh, the king is coming. Look, you know, let's get him. whereas previously, you know, they would throw flowers like that. Whenever he came, everyone was throwing flowers. And there was elephants, right? And the elephants were spurting scented water like that. And everyone was throwing flowers, and there was drums playing, and there was people singing, and this was the scene.
Chennai.
And everyone was offering gifts like that. Whereas these days, you know, you don't know what will happen. Even recently, the Pakistani leader came back to Pakistan after many years, and they killed her within 7 days of her coming into the country. That's how terrible Kali Yuga is. They kill the leader these days. Whereas previously, there was so much love for the leader. Like that. So this is why the Bhagavatam teaches us what is actually the right thing. Where are we up to? The city of Bahishmati, rich in all kinds of wealth, was so called because Lord Vishnu's hair dropped there from his body when he manifested himself as Lord Boar. As he shook his body, this very hair fell and turned into blades of evergreen kusha grass and kasha, another kind of grass used for mats, by means of which the sages worship Lord Vishnu. After defeating the demons who had interfered with the performance of their sacrifices. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that a place becomes holy when it is connected to the Lord. So it is not Bahishmati. Bahishmati, the capital of Swayambhuva Manu, it was not auspicious because there was so much wealth there and everything was so opulent. That's not why it was auspicious. The reason Swayambhuva Manu built his capital there was because Lord Varahadev's hairs, in the form of the boar, they had dropped there, and when they dropped there, the kusha grass grew. So that place was considered a holy dharm, because it was connected with the Supreme Lord. So that's why he chose to make his capital there, because it was a holy place. And it became holy because all the citizens were simply absorbed in following the king, who is always absorbed in devotional activities. That is the actual purpose of a capital. These days a capital, just like I went to Canberra about 18 months ago to visit some devotees to do some preaching. But for some reason they thought I was very interested to go and see all the tourist things in Canberra. So in about 3 days they took me to all the tourist spots in Canberra. And basically everything in Canberra is about the wars that happened previously. You know, there's war monuments, World War I, World War II, and all about the government and how the government runs and Parliament House and all these things. So it didn't really remind me of Krishna. You know, it wasn't really very, you know, the capital is supposed to be in a very auspicious place. When you go there, the citizens should remember Krishna when they go there, because the activities in the capital, then the rest of the country will follow. And if the capital is Krishna conscious, then everything else will be Krishna conscious. Just like in Australia, the capital is Canberra, right? It's materialistic, so the rest of the country is materialistic. Like that. But in the olden days, you would go to the capital, and there would be such a devotional mood there, then all around the capital, everything else would become auspicious. Where is it? It's near Winchelsea.
Is there much research?
No, I drove past it, I saw the sign. I'm just trying to think. Oh no, that was Bamba. That's a different one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Manu spread a seat of Kusha and Kasha and worship the Lord, the personality of Godhead, by whose grace he had obtained the rule of the terrestrial globe. The Prabhupada mentions within the purport that, about two-thirds down, when such acknowledgement is given, either by... Actually, I'll read just above that. Therefore, those who are in possession of such valuable facilities must acknowledge their gratefulness to the Lord by worshipping Him and offering what they have received from Him. When such acknowledgement is given, either by a family, nation or society, their abode becomes almost like Vaikuntha, and it becomes free from the operation of the threefold miseries of this material world. So this is what it becomes like when the place becomes like Vaikuntha. In other words, when everyone follows the leader properly, and if the leader is Krishna conscious, this is the most important principle here, that Manu is the leader of the entire universe. I mean, besides Lord Brahma, who is the head of the universe like that, but Manu is in charge of virtually the whole universe. And because he is Krishna conscious, then everyone in the universe is following his example, right? And so many others are becoming Krishna conscious. And then the place where such a great leader resides and everyone follows him, then that entire area becomes Krishna conscious. And that is the atmosphere. And then it becomes, Prabhupada says, almost like Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means?
No anxiety.
And that's what the temple becomes like. When you have a very great leader and everyone is following very nicely and they take on that spiritual atmosphere, the whole place becomes like Vaikuntha. Just like Radhanath Swami, who is spending, you know, about 6 months of the year in the Chaupati temple. Is it? Like 6 months? Yeah. So he's spending about 6 months a year in the Chaupati temple. So because the leader is so Krishna conscious, and because everyone is following, then when you go to that place, it is almost like Vaikuntha. So that is our duty. Our duty is to make everywhere in ISKCON almost like Vaikuntha. That's what this temple is like. Whenever you come here, it is almost like Vaikuntha. It is a place where there is no anxiety. Even you come here and, you know, there's some things going on, just like, you know, today devotees have been telling me about their problems. Yeah, devotees have problems also. But still, the overall atmosphere is Vaikuntha. Basically, the atmosphere is Vaikuntha. Sometimes devotees have problems, but still, more or less, you know, this place is like Vaikuntha. It is a place of shelter. And that's where we have to make more and more atmosphere like this spread out in our homes, right, wherever we preach. We have to create this Vaikuntha atmosphere. That spread, that was Prabhupada's vision. Everything became like Vaikuntha, the whole material world.
Prabhupada, how do you use this two kinds of breath to worship the Lord?
You know, when we do the deity worship, the kusha grass, we sit on the mats made of the kusha grass.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the kusha grass is also used in some parts of the jagya also.
Okay.
Not that. So we use this grass in that respect.
So they both are used for the same purpose?
Similar purpose, I think.
Okay.
Kasha, I'm not sure specifically, but
mm-hmm.
at least kusha grass, they use it to sit on. It is considered to be pavitra or pure.
Mm-hmm.
Kusha is pure. That's why they use it in the jagyas.
Mm-hmm.
Not that.
Because it's considered more important, yeah?
This particular kusha is considered that. I don't know if all kush is considered like that, but it's considered pavitra. It is pure. Certain things are pavitra. Yeah? What are some examples of things that are pavitra? Pavitra means pure.
Cow
dung is pavitra. It is pure.
Concha.
Concha is pavitra. It is pure.
Eagle
feathers are pavitra. Yeah? Yeah. They're auspicious. I don't know if they're pavitra, but they're auspicious, definitely.
Wool.
Yeah, wool is pavitra.
Do you see?
A tuft of hair from the
Yeah, it's specific yak. There's a particular yak. We do with the chama. Oh, that comes from the Himalayas, one particular yak. Then that is considered for vitro. Which one?
Deer skin.
The deer skin is considered for vitro. It's pure. Yeah.
Horse mouth.
Mm-hmm. The mouth of the horse. Where did you hear that from?
I
did say that, but then one time I said it in front of Nishri and Kabacha, and he wasn't very impressed. So I withdraw that one. Okay. I think it still is true. I have heard it from other sources, but he said, where did you hear that from? And I said, well, I told him where I heard it from, but he said, we have to prove it. So at this point in time, then, I'm not sure.
Cow urine is also pure.
Cow urine, yeah. It means that anything from the back of the cow is pure. What comes from the back of the cow?
Urine,
right? Dung, milk, right? The dust from their hooves, that dust which comes up from their hooves, the dust when the cow walks, the dust that comes up is pavitra, it is pure. It's considered like that. Everything is pure. What I heard, one devotee told me, he said that the back of the cow is pure and the front of the horse is pure. That's what he told me. Mm-hmm. So when the horse goes, you know when they do that? He told me that it's pure. So I said that, and then Kabat said, so I don't know. That one I'll take back, because I'm not sure. But the back of the cow is definitely, definitely pure.
I thought the cow is pure,
not
the front of it.
No, the front is not pure. If the cow licks you, you know the cow when they lick you, that's not pure. That's not pavitra.
Mm-hmm.
But everything at the back is pure. The dung, the milk, the
urine,
all that is pure. Just like, I had, what's that? Bhaktivedanta Swami may know also. I think the Sri Kavacha would know by now because he's done some research, so we'll have to find out.
You worship the cow, right? So you don't worship the cow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know you worship the front, I'm just saying. I'm just saying that what comes out of the back is pure. The whole cow is worshipable, but it is said that what comes out of the back is considered pure. Just like in the last month I've had two people ring the farm and ask for cow urine. They said, can you get cow urine for us? And I said, well, you have two options. One is you get it yourself. Because if you want cow urine, you have to run around behind the cow for 6 hours. Which I'm not going to do because I don't have time. I said the other option is you donate $6,000 to the New Underground, and then I'll run around behind the cow and catch the urine.
I
used
to get the cow urine from my mother, so we know how to get it.
Get it from where?
How to get the cow urine,
You know how to get it? How do you get it?
You just peel at the back of it, huh? In the other way, and then you get it.
Yeah, you just run behind it. Okay.
Not
how to
run behind it.
When they are tired.
Yeah. How they do it in India, they do it at the time of milking. That's how they do it. In India, they do it in the goshala. There's all the cows coming to milk. And then when they're all milking, then they pay one boy to hold the jar. And whenever one of the cows is passing urine, they come and catch it. That's how they do it, like that. But in Nandagram, none of our cows are milking. We're all just old cows and they're just walking around. So I'm not going to walk around for 6 hours to get some urine.
This time I've gone to Sri Dhampanako. So there actually I was in need of visiting the cow urine because we wanted to wash a few demons from the paraphernalia which we had picked up from Srinathji. So the Brahmachari took us to the cow shed. And he showed how to collect the cow milk. But he, for the sake of convenience, picked up a cow calf and picked up the urine. And then the senior Brahmachari said that this is a cow urine or this is a calf urine. So he said it's a calf urine. So you should always get the urine of a cow who has already conceived the baby. Mm. So the urine should be taken of a cow who has already given the birth.
Mm.
You can't take basically a calf urine. Something we learn.
Okay. I'll have to remember that next time I'm running around the paddock. That's what I like. Having entered the city of Vahishmati, in which he had previously lived, Manu entered his palace, which was filled with an atmosphere that eradicated the three miseries of material existence. So this is what this chapter is teaching us, that there needs to be a spiritual atmosphere created on earth. It is the duty of the Krishna conscious movement to create this atmosphere on earth. Right? Prabhupada said that the Krishna consciousness movement will go down in history as being recorded for having saved humanity in its darkest hour. Things are going to get much worse in the next 10,000 years, guaranteed. It's just the beginning. Things get much worse. The Prabhupada says it will go down in history that the Krishna consciousness movement saved humanity in its darkest hour. That time is yet to come. Okay, the Prabhupada said it will happen, it will happen. Okay. So, Prabhupada says in the purport, we cannot stop the miseries of material atmosphere, but Krishna consciousness is the antiseptic method to protect us from being affected by the miseries of material existence. In other words, in the material world you cannot stop the miseries. Right? It's not possible to stop the miseries. It is not possible because you're in the material world. If you want to stop them, go to the spiritual world. But if you're in the material world, you cannot stop them. But devotees do not feel the effects of them. Because they're so absorbed in the ecstasy of devotional service, they do not notice the miseries in the material world. They do not feel the effects. It's not they stop. It's not when you become a devotee, everything stops. Right? There are still problems, but we don't feel the effects. If you're absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. Celestial musicians and their wives sang in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor. And early in the morning, every day, he used to listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a loving heart. So Prabhupada says that the Vedic principles are so designed that we can fulfill our material desires and simultaneously become Krishna conscious. That is the beauty of the Vedic system. Just like in other modern religious traditions, right? In some of the Christian traditions, I think in the Catholic Church, then if you want to be a priest in the Catholic Church, you have to take a vow of celibacy. You cannot get married. So then what has been the result of that? We've seen in modern times in the Catholic Church that many, many, many of their priests have been molesting children and so many problems, you know, so many problems, right? Because they're not allowed to fulfill their material desires. That's artificial, right? If you artificially try to renounce beyond your capacity, right, you will come into all sorts of problems, right? You may fall down from spiritual life. It's very important that devotees do not try to artificially attain a platform which is beyond them. Sometimes you'll see the devotees, they try to be more renounced than their actual realization is at, and then they run into problems. So, the Vedic system, which is being taught here by Swayambhuva Manu, is that you can fulfill your material desires and simultaneously regulate your life and advance in Krishna consciousness. That's what Swayambhuva Manu is doing. He has a beautiful wife, right? He has a beautiful daughter, right? Very powerful son, great opulence, great wealth, right? Very comfortable material situation. But his main concern is to serve Krishna. That's the point. He's not concerned with trying to enjoy the material facility separate from Krishna. That's his example. And that's why Manu is one of the 12 Mahajans. Right, he sets the perfect example how to become Krishna conscious. That's what the Manu Samhita teaches us. Fulfill your material desires, but focus on becoming Krishna conscious. That is the point. So, what was the example? Prabhupada mentions in the purport that one has to absorb one's consciousness in worshipping the deity. This is what Swayambhuva Manu was doing. And Prabhupada explains that back in those days, then every palace had a temple room within it. Every palace. So the royal family, in each palace they would have a temple room. And they would get up in the morning and go to Mangalati. And then they would, Prabhupada explains in the purport, hey, tell the children to quiet down a little bit. Then Prabhupada explains in the purport that after Mangalati, they would all sit within the temple room and they would chant songs in glorification of the deities. Like that. So in this way, Prabhupada says, their lives became very auspicious. They were satisfying their material desires, but they were making advancement. And then Prabhupada says in the evening, they would all come back and someone would discuss Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and then they'd have more kirtan. And then Prabhupada said that when they went to sleep, this is in the royal palaces back in those days, in the royal palaces they would go to sleep and there was someone within the palace playing the shanai, right, very softly, just playing the music and chanting about Krishna. And when everyone went to sleep, they were just thinking about Krishna. And Prabhupada says, and they would dream about Krishna. And then they'd wake up in the morning, and someone was playing about Krishna. Right? And then they'd do their service all during the day, go to the temple and do their service. All day everyone was Krishna conscious. Prabhupada says, if you do that, you'll go back to Godhead. That's why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke 5,000 years ago, he said that if you do not complete your devotional service, then you'll take birth in the family of very wealthy Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, right, or Brahmanas, and you'll continue your devotional service. This is what it meant. You'll take birth in these kind of situations and you'd be have an opportunity to become Krishna conscious. And then Prabhupada said, if you follow this system, you'll definitely go back to Godhead. So we have to make our lives as much as we can like it is described in these pages of the Bhagavad Gita. Either make your palace like Swayambhuva Manu's, or make your cottage like Cardamom Muni's. And wherever you live, if you live in a palace, if you live in a cottage, then make it Krishna conscious.
Last time, we did an article, I think Veer Krishna has written that article about pure chanting, and there he has mentioned about Swayambhuva Manu's example. And he has said that that is why Prabhupada has always stressed that you should always read the Krishna book before you go to sleep. And in the morning we get up and we chant our japa, so that by sleeping also our consciousness is, you know, absorbed in Krishna, and then we get up also immediately we go from Mangalarati and start chanting japa. And he has included this whole paragraph from this book in that article.
Thus Swayambhuva Manu was a saintly king. Although absorbed in material happiness, he was dragged. He was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, for he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. Consequently, although his duration of life gradually came to an end, his long life, consisting of a Manvantara era, was not spent in vain. Since he ever engaged in hearing, contemplating, writing down and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. So Prabhupada says that the life of a person in Krishna consciousness is ever fresh. Meaning that this is the challenge of being a devotee. Just like you'll see in this temple, how many senior devotees are there? Not many. Right, there should be many more. Right, there should be dozens of senior devotees in this temple. Right, there's not many senior devotees in the temple. Right, because this is the challenge of being a devotee. It's not easy to stay a devotee in this Kali Yuga atmosphere for a long time. Stay very fixed up. You have to continuously get the taste in Krishna consciousness. And the taste comes by hearing and chanting about Krishna. And by hearing and chanting about Krishna, Prabhupada says it is ever fresh. It is always fresh. But this is the challenge of a devotee. A devotee has to continuously get this taste. I know for myself that this course, this Bhakti Bhai Bhava course, is saving my life. Because if it wasn't for this course, then I may not be reading Prabhupada's books as much as I am. And if I wasn't reading Prabhupada's books, then I would not be getting an opportunity to become Krishna conscious. But because I have to read his books, because I have to facilitate this course, then when I read his books, then I get new taste every time that I read them. Because that is the subject matter. So this is what we have to plan in our lives. We have to plan as devotees to make a plan that even after many, many years, we're still absorbing ourselves and hearing and chanting. Because if you don't do that, your taste dries up and then you just get involved in material activities. And you'll see even many devotees have been practicing for many years, but they don't really have a taste for hearing and chanting. But if you don't get that taste, that ever-fresh taste, which is always there, the taste is always there, but you have to get it. If you don't get it, then you may not be so fixed up in the future. And this is just the beginning. And I don't think, oh, you know, I've been doing it for 5 years now, I'm really advanced. Right? Or, you know, I've been doing it for 10 years and I'm really going well. It's not like that. It becomes more challenging as time goes by. You have to really put effort in if you want to stay for a long, long, long time. Because you see, we're all descended devotees. It's not easy. You don't think it's easy. Right? You have to learn to absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness.
I didn't think they used to write down that thing. I didn't think they used to write down that thing.
They did, but it wasn't like these days. These days, if we don't have books, then we forget everything. But back then, they had books, but there was also brahmanas who remembered everything also.
Okay.
So it wasn't just books. But these days, if we don't have books, then... He passed his time, which lasted 71 cycles of the four ages. 71 times 4,320,000 years. Always thinking of Vasudev and always engaged in matters regarding Vasudev. Thus he transcended the three destinations. What are the three destinations?
Goodness, passion,
ignorance. Yeah, Prabhupada primarily says goodness, passion, ignorance. Goodness means if you're in goodness, you take birth on upper planets. If you're in passion, you take birth in the middle planets. If you're in ignorance, you go down to the lower planets. But when you become Krishna conscious, you don't take birth in any of these places. Right? You go back to Krishna.
Does
Not sure. Not sure. He's not the only one who lives for this life. Those who associate him with him would also live for a long period of time. Shatarupa would be his wife for the whole time. Devahuti would be his daughter for that. So they would also have a life like him. On that. Therefore, O Vidura, how can persons completely under the shelter of Lord Krishna in devotional service be put into miseries pertaining to the body, the mind, nature, and other men and living creatures? In reply to questions asked by certain sages, he, Swayambhu Manu, out of compassion for all living entities, taught the diverse sacred duties of men in general and the different varnas and ashramas. What is that called?
Manusamita.
I have spoken to you of the wonderful character of Swayambhu Manu, the original king, whose reputation is worthy of description. Please hear as I speak of the flourishing of his daughter, Devahuti. So, next week we'll begin chapter 23, which is Devahuti's lamentation. And then at the end of chapter 3, well, sorry, the end of chapter 23, we'll have the closed book exam. So, the closed book exam probably in about 2 weeks' time, between 2 or 3 weeks' time. So, begin to prepare yourself. Study those chapters. When we had the exam, chapters 18 and 19 were about Varahadeva, the end of his path home, which we didn't finish from last year. So I may ask one or two questions from that section, but primarily the questions will come from chapter 20 to 23, those four chapters, because that is the new section in relation to Manu and his descendants and so forth. So that's where we'll really concentrate on. And then the next section, 24 to 28, I think, 24 to 28, will be the beginning of Kapila's teachings. And then 29 to 33 will be the final part of Kapila's teachings, which hopefully will finish by the end of this year. That's the plan. So that's what we're aiming for. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.